This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
All right, indeed. Rolling along here on a Friday. I'm the Bulldog. Mike has the day off today. Joining us on the West Her Hotline is our man Sal Capaccio right now. His appearance is sponsored by New York's only outlet liquor. And you need to stock up. It's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? What's your forecast? Is this supposed to blow through here, Sal? You going to be all right for Bison's baseball tonight?
I think so. We're supposed to head there with my wife's work and some people there, and I actually reached out to our friend Patrick Hammer, my friend from Channel 2, mm-hmm. and I asked him, and he said, should be okay. Maybe something a little bit later, like a stray, like small shower, but as yep. of right now, he told me it should be okay. So I've been doing my due diligence, so to speak, on making sure.
I'm okay, just for the record, for future reference, with our friend Patrick Hammer. That's
there
good.
You go.
I'm
just
fine with that.
Sure.
I'm a fan.
And I do want to thank Joe Marino for switching spots with me today. The weather around the country a little bit has wreaked havoc. I was supposed to pick my parents up at the airport. Their flight got delayed. So
that's what I figured.
Joe
happened.
Is great. I love listening to him, and you know he's going to be on with you. So that's great. But I appreciate him doing
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So your piece here at WGR550.com. Well, there's two new ones again today. One on the idea of the Bills, just how seriously they considered moving up from 9-3 on draft night. But I'm focused on this running back piece, and I'm curious. We didn't get a chance to talk about this yesterday at all, and I'm a little I like what I'm reading from Bean, but I guess I'm a little bit surprised at the frequency of words like competition and pushing, and we don't know how it's all going to shake out. Like I'm encouraged by that because it sounds more like they're open to may the best man play than I thought they might have been.
Yeah, I think it's a really good observation you made about the word competition, how much it came up in these quotes, and you know, really kind of reading into where they may be with LeSean. And as I've always felt that once they get to camp, all bets are off. I will say I still think that he makes the roster. I still mm-hmm. think that he goes into the season as the number one guy. I don't think there's a guarantee of that. I don't think there's a guarantee of either of those things. However, they might be tied to each other. If LeSean McCoy is on the roster, he's probably the number one guy. You're not keeping him around at
right.
his salary.
Right.
And his age to be the number two guy, right?
Right. If he gets passed in any way whatsoever. And that could be, like, I guess I haven't really thought of that being Frank Gore, mm-hmm. but reading what Bean had to say, recognizing, you know, it's the offseason and you get lip service about competition a lot. So I know that there is that. So I don't want to be a sucker here, but I don't know, man. I didn't really think about Gore beating out LeSean McCoy. Reading this made me think, I don't know, do they think maybe Gore could be better than LeSean McCoy for them this year? I think maybe they do.
I just think that they want to have as many options as possible to see how it all shakes out. And, you know, Brandon basically said that. But as we sit here, LeSean McCoy is their number one running back right now. I mean, that he will go to camp. He will take, I'd be stunned if anyone else took the first snap basically with the first team offense.
Right.
Other than LeSean McCoy. And that's been the plan. But they've given themselves some options just in case. I think when they really evaluated the offense, and this goes back to last year's trade deadline after they kept LeSean and people asked Brandon, you know, what was the situation there and moving on from him or whatever. And everything I had heard and everything he had said publicly was basically, we think we can help LeSean a lot by what we can put around because it really wasn't all on him. Sure, he can do some things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, better, but it really was the circumstances surrounding him that didn't allow him to have the year that they hoped that he would have. And I remember Brandon Bean even saying publicly at one point, like, we told LeSean, we're going to help you. Like, we're going to fix this. And he's still here. And he's going to go to camp as the number one running back. And then we will see what happens? I think the thing you have to avoid here, though, is kind of like what we talked about yesterday with the receivers, which is if you have Antonio Brown on your roster, it stunts the development of a Robert Foster maybe because you have to feed, because he's Antonio Brown, you have to give him the ball, right?
All right. The door is closed to Foster really emerging if Antonio Brown is on your team.
That's right. So I think the one area I think they have to be careful is he is LeSean McCoy. And if you're going to have him on the roster, you don't want it to be at the expense of having the development of a Devin Singletary, even if a Singletary isn't quite ready to be that guy yet, or having T.J. Yeldon on the field when he needs to be. That's, to me, where the maybe more tricky balance comes in, because he does have this name, and he comes with him the fact that if you're going to have him on the roster, he is LeSean McCoy.
Yeah, right. Mike and I were talking about this, and maybe we had you chime in on it or not. I don't remember. But Gore's kind of the same way, a little bit. Like, right, if you're trying to figure out you know, game day, and you've got these four guys, and you think you can only afford to dress three of them. Maybe there's a special teams factor there too. If there's another guy, whatever, okay. But you don't have Frank Gore and LeSean McCoy on your team, and don't give them a uniform on Sunday. This is not something you do. So if in any way you sense early on that McCoy's role could be diminishing, either because of A, his own ability right now, or his fit in your offense, or the emergence of someone else, then maybe you have to act on it. It reminds me a little bit of, as unpopular a decision as it was, when the Bills moved on, this was Whaley, and I know it seems like it was sloppily handled, at least Fred Jackson certainly asserts that it was, I don't know different, that like Fred was getting passed by Carlos Williams. And if you are going to have a veteran like that on your team, you got to make room for him. And if he's not going to be getting carries instead of the rookie, well, then I think you got to do something. Otherwise, you're just going to have a thing. It's every week it's going to be a thing like, is Fred Jackson active? Is he getting the ball? Why isn't he getting the ball? He's Fred Jackson. You want to just sort of remove that. And I think McCoy is maybe could be a similar situation.
Yes, what you want to avoid is any sort of consternation amongst the team, right?
Right.
Any fracturing that could happen. That's the kind of situation that could happen with a guy like that.
Guys looking at each other going, what are they doing with Shady? Why isn't Shady going? What's happening? How come he's not getting the ball? Like, what's going on? You know, like, you don't want that. You want to just
remove Shady himself.
Right, exactly.
He would have the kind of personality and kind of confidence, and he's built this what might be a Hall of Fame career, where he would feel like, okay, well, I'm LeSean McCoy, and if I'm going to be here, I need to be getting the ball.
Right.
And we just heard Brandon Bean say the same thing, read it, about Frank Gore.
Mm-hmm.
He wants the ball all the time. That's what he's done. He is going to the Hall of Fame someday. We know that, right? I mean, we're certain of that. And those are the kinds of guys that you can't – you know, it's funny because as much as they have LeSean, LeSean actually has the littlest margin for error here amongst all the guys. Because he has to be the number one guy, or where does he fit?
Right, he's not your backup running back.
Correct, but Frank Gore doesn't have to be the number one guy. He can still be on the roster, and certainly T.J. Yeldon or Devin Singletary are like that. But
that's right.
LeSean has to be the number one guy. If he has any slippage at all, now we have to think about moving on and how we're going to do that, because we do not want this thing to linger on. Didn't you and Mike just have a conversation about this with the Sabres, and was it Lindy and a couple of guys?
Yes, it came up in the context of talking about Gore and McCoy being active on game days. Yes, Mike had a conversation with Lindy, you know, many years ago. Lindy was still the Sabres coach, and he admitted that having Andrechuk and Gilmore here in 2001 and not having them in bigger roles was very challenging. Because if you have guys that are that respected and that experienced in the league, you have to sort of give them the room to do what it is that will come naturally.
They
will lead, and players will fall in behind them. And if they are in any way emasculated, is not exactly the right word, but if they are minimized, that's better. In any way, it sort of marginalizes their value. And so, and it could end up hurting you more than helping you in the long run, and you don't want that.
I'm glad you mentioned it was Andrew Chuck and Gilmore, because for some reason I had Rick Vive on the mind. I'm like, I don't think that makes sense. It wouldn't have been Rick Vive.
I don't think Rick Vive played for Lindy, no. They were teammates.
That's right. But you're right. And I think that, again, in the easier way to do this would be to think about quarterbacks, although it's not the same. I get that. But teams, this is, you can't have that situation at quarterback. You know, I think that the Chiefs were kind of similar. I'm not saying Alex Smith is a Hall of Famer, but if Patrick Mahomes is going to take over, you had to do something with Alex Smith, right? Mm-hmm. You just had to.
Right.
You couldn't keep him on the roster really as a backup. He's good enough to be a starter in the league. And that's just kind of how it has to be. It's unfortunate that you can't just have all these good players at every position sitting there, but that's not how it works. A, because of money, and B, maybe more importantly sometimes, because of ego, the name, what comes with that, and how it affects a locker room and how it impacts a team overall because of what you just said about guys looking around, guys talking. You kind of have to eliminate that. And that puts pressure on the organization on a lot of fronts to really treat a lot of this pretty delicately. So I do think it's going to be treated delicately going to camp, except for the fact that LeSean has to prove himself. You know, if he doesn't, then we get to that point. If he does, that's okay. I mean, then here we go. Let's go. LeSean McCoy is back. He's the number one guy. They got him for a year. They're going to give him the ball, and hopefully he runs for 1,000 yards.
Sal Capaccio is on the West Hur Hotline with me here on WGR. There's one other part of this, too, that you present in this piece at WGR550.com, and I would encourage fans who are listening to this to get to the website or at radio.com, however you access it, and check it out. But Bean goes on here to talk about, like, the coaches will have to sort of sort that out and mix it up. And then he talks about practice and padded practices and monitoring who's hitting and reading the holes, who's hitting it, who's the line trusting. That makes me think of Ivory versus McCoy last year, where Ivory was, you know, marginally more effective than McCoy, and their styles are very different. And what have I got in Gore? I've got a guy that is just going to hit it, as opposed to McCoy, who is more of, he's not quite Le'Veon Bell, but he's more like that than he is like a hit it up in there guy. He's going to want to try to give you the leg and make you miss and that kind of thing. And I don't know. I just read a lot of this from Bean. It just adds up to, I'm encouraged that it reads to me like they're very open, and I want them to be open.
Well, look, I don't think this organization has really operated under these guys. I mean, unless you could give me an example where we could talk about it, I don't think they've operated any other way where it's just, things are done for window dressing, right? I think that they've been done, whether that's for good or bad. We can even talk about Nathan Peterman starting when he did. Like, they did it because they felt that was the best move, and it didn't turn out, right? I mean, they're going to do things according to what they feel is the best to put the best product on the field. But I do think because of this player and who he is, you have to kind of navigate those waters a little bit differently. Now, to that question about how they handle these guys, the reps, getting the right amount, how do you know if LeSean McCoy really, you know, yes, you're going to get those training camp reps, but, you know, you're not banging on each other during training camp practice as much. You know, you can go live a few times, but you're not doing that really with McCoy and Gore that much. You want to make sure they stay fresh. I looked back, Bulldog, the last two preseasons, which are obviously Sean McDermott's 2 years in Buffalo, LeSean McCoy has had 10 carries and 4 carries in preseason. Like, he doesn't carry the ball in preseason.
Well, that's interesting. You would expect Singletary will carry the ball in preseason, right?
Right.
And so maybe it's more of a situation where Singletary, the more they see him, the more they have to have a conversation like, boy, is this becoming apparent that we got to get this guy on the field? Is there something undeniable happening here? And like, I know that's a lot to say. You know, the guy's a third-round pick out of a small college. So, you know, I don't know where the ceiling really is for him at this point. But I just know guys show up in this league all the time that are even less known than Devin Singletary, third-round pick, and perform. So I'm very open, and I guess I keep saying it. It sounds to me like the Bills are too, that if this kid shows up and looks like he can do it, then maybe they'll find out if McCoy has any value. Does McCoy have any value?
I mean, I would say maybe a fifth or sixth round pick for a team that needs a little bit of cachet. You know what I mean? At this point, his value would certainly change if there was a team that had an injury. I think right now, with rosters being where they are, teams being kind of set with who they have, they want to go to camp, they want to have these guys battle it out, I don't think he would have much value right now as we sit here on July 19th. But if we get to August 8th, 9th, 10th, and somebody had an injury around the league, I think that could really change things.
So, Sal, this is one we spent almost 20 minutes now on this one piece about the running backs. Leaving that for now, the piece about the draft day trade, I don't know, what did you learn in talking to Bean about what he was maybe trying to accomplish on draft night talking with the Jets?
Well, according to Brandon Bean, the way he basically presented it was the Jets were kind of using the Bills as a pawn. They were basically trying to drum up interest, and those were his words, drum up interest. And he said, you need a partner to do that. You have to basically, that's the fairest way to put it. And I think that was his way of saying, I don't really want to, you know, accuse them and say right out, like, hey, they were using us, but this is how the game is played, right? Mm-hmm. They wanted someone to come up to number three. They called us, but he did listen. They did have a couple conversations. I'm imagining, this is just me hypothesizing now after taking it all in. I'm imagining it went something like this. Mike Maccagnan calls and says, hey, you interested in coming up to number three? And Brandon Bean in the back of his head is probably like, not really. But he says to Mike Maccagnan, sure, I mean, I'll give you a fifth round pick. Okay, well, there you go. Now they've actually engaged in discussions, right?
Right.
And it gets reported that way. And then the Jets can rightfully say, well, hey, reporter over here who we want to leak this to. We've had discussions about the Bills moving up to number three.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be something like that. You know, yep. I don't know, but I don't think the Bills took the initiative here is what I'm saying.
Right, and that's sort of what I would have suspected. And again, this is just what Bean is telling you. And like, you know, I don't want to just believe him because it lines up with what I thought. You know, there could be some reason why he doesn't want to divulge exactly what was happening there, but it would have made sense at the time for the Bills to let the Jets use them as a pawn because someone going up there would have been good for the Bills. Presuming they're going up there to what, overdraft a quarterback or just do something that would still increase their chances of getting Ed Oliver, I think, even if they just go up there to take Quinnen Williams.
Right.
Whoever goes up to three wants to do that, and the Jets drop down, provided they drop down below the Bills, you know, then it's all good, I think. You get a team out of the way.
And I think the Bills made sense for the Jets to do that with because of the retirement of Kyle Williams and how much they were linked to Ed Oliver, and then Quinnen Williams is the only other guy in the draft you could say would be better than him at his position, maybe. Maybe they would say, you know what, the Bills really, yeah, they need a defensive tackle. They could take Ed Oliver. They really like Quinnen Williams. I mean, you could present it that way if you know you're trying to throw it out there that the Bills are moving up. So it kind of made sense. I thought part of it though that from the get go, I was most skeptical of two teams in the division doing this
mm-hmm.
with each other.
Mm-hmm.
If it was any other team, I would have taken it a little more seriously and said, "Well, I don't agree, but maybe this is happening." But because it was the Jets, because it was the two teams in the AFC East together, I just couldn't see it happening.
Sal Capaccio on the West Hur Hotline. Sal, I guess I knew this about you, but it was nice to see it all in one place here on my Twitter feed. Your decorated career at Cleve Hill, because I asked my Twitter followers. We haven't spent much time on this on the air as of yet. We may end up doing more of that. But Connolly Cup nominee in football, all ECIC in both football and baseball. And then what do you got here? But at my size, I far more looked the part of a center field leadoff hitter than you were. I asked the audience, well, I asked people on Twitter, like, what, most credibly, what position in what sport do you think you could have stepped on the field with professionals and not been just an utter embarrassment? And, you know, you chimed in. It was nice to have you play along.
I'll tell you, even at my size, baseball players now are pretty big. You know, they're really big dudes, but I was a good football player. Yes, I was, you know, all area and a Connolly Cup nominee. And but I was a wide receiver and safety who really I wasn't even big enough to play Division One football. Even maybe Division Three, I could have played a little bit, but not that size. But center fielder, leadoff hitter in baseball, I could have passed. you could have put me out there and said, yeah, that guy belongs on the field. So it's interesting though. You're right, and it kind of goes to what we were talking about yesterday with the way athletes are really built and the special ones and how they look,
right,
because
right.
I didn't look like that. I was a good athlete and I could play and I had very good accomplishments, but I certainly did not look the part of, you know, some sort of college football player.
Right, right. Did your coach chime in here? I saw you tagged.
I don't know. He didn't yet. Coach Glenn Graham, by the way, he's receiving a great award. I think he might have already this summer. A prestigious award across New York State for being one of the top coaches in the entire state. He's just awesome, a mentor of mine. And I tagged him because we always have fun with stuff like this. And it's fun. So I hope he does get a chance to chime in. But, you know, it was really cool kind of thinking about that a little bit. And I'm glad that you asked.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, enjoy the Bisons tonight. And then you're off for New York City. You got Yankees tomorrow or Sunday. You don't know yet which day.
Don't know yet. No. It just kind of depends on the schedule in New York. So we're going to figure some things out. But we're definitely going to one of the two games. They're both afternoon games. And then we're staying through Monday as well. And got a lot to go. I'm going to go to the Museum of Natural History.
All right.
We're staying right near Central Park there. There's going to be a lot going on. It's going to be cool.
That's very cool. All right, man. Well, have a good time, and we'll touch base with you next week, I am sure, as training camp gets ramped up. Good luck picking up the folks, too, at the airport.
Yes, thank you.
All right, that's our man Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. His appearance with me today and always is brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it is the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? All right, we'll continue here. I'll see if we get some calls drummed up on McCoy. Sal gives me some credit for sort of picking out here that Bean might be revealing something about what they're thinking of doing at running back. So I'm encouraged by that. We'll keep going on that. Maybe we'll work in this conversation we're having on Twitter about what sport you think you could have credibly passed as a professional at as we go as well. Mike Schoep has the day off. I'm the Bulldog. 803-0550. If you got a thought on McCoy, I mean, I feel like for all the times Sal, myself, and Mike, and Joe have had this conversation, I don't feel like I've heard from too many fans about his role on the team and if you even want there to be a role on the team for LeSean McCoy in 2019. Now's as good a time as any. 803-0550, 1-888-552-550. I'm the Bulldog, and this is WGR.
If a quarterback plays with really good mechanics and his accuracy is not great, then that's what it is. But I think that Josh's mechanics can improve dramatically. I think because of his strong arm, he has a tendency for his lower body and his upper body not always to work in sync. That has to happen. Then we'll be able to make a better determination.
That is Greg Cosell. Excellent analysis. Lots of film study goes into the work that he does for the NFL matchup show that airs on weekends during football season on ESPN. He's a regular guest during the season with Murph on One Bills Live, and he was on today and went under the hood on Allen. Ben, we'll see about the mechanics changing, improving for Allen. I'm not here to say that it can't happen for a player who has followed the career path that Allen has. Like, I don't think until he really got to the NFL that this is a player that has been getting the very best instruction. So it's possible that under proper professional tutelage, I might be down on Wyoming a little more than I should be, but maybe he'll learn, maybe he'll improve in those areas. I'm very skeptical when I hear talk in an off season about a quarterback doing the work to try to improve the release and the mechanics in general, the footwork, your platform that you're throwing off of, and just getting more consistent in those areas. I think it feels to me very much like the sort of thing you hear about a flawed quarterback, and you're hopeful and really they're showing all the positive signs in practice, but then the game starts and it's really fast and you just sort of revert to form. You know, you just do it the way that you've been doing it because that's your muscle memory. And I think it's hard when you get to a certain age athletically to sort of transform how you're going to do something that's as like fundamental to your job in the NFL as, say, throwing the football is for a quarterback. I think it's more likely that the Bills are going to have to find a way to manage around Allen's shortcomings and enhance his strengths and play to those and hope that that all comes together in such a way that he becomes someone that they can really depend on and ascend to the level of reliable franchise level quarterback, like someone you want to move forward with for the next 10 years. I guess I'd say I'm a little, I'm skeptical that this any mechanical overhaul is going to bear great results for him. But you know, it could happen. I don't have to be right about that. But when I hear that, I just think, I don't know. Good luck. I mean, I remember at one point Fitzpatrick, you know, was here. He's into that contract with the Bills. And there's a new quarterback coach that comes in, and it's, you know, it's footwork and it's platform and it's getting rid of the bad habits because, you know, Fitz, boy, you know, if you could just get more of the good throws and fewer of the bad ones, you know, it did it work? You know, I mean, he's had a fine career in the NFL, but he's exactly who he was when he got here. I think he's still pretty much that guy. And you know, that's fine. There's a passable level there, and you know, I'm not here to like grain on that, but I don't think it got better. You know, he didn't find some magic in the like second, third of his career or something and reinvent himself. So you know, Allen is still young, younger than Fitz was when the Bills were talking like that with their new quarterbacks coach. So. Again, I'm not saying it can't work, but I don't know. I would sooner expect that the Bills are going to have to work with Allen at what he does really well and find ways to make that work for them rather than they're going to suddenly find a guy who's that much more accurate. Like, you know, we talked – I enjoyed yesterday the conversation we had with Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus, a great, great deal. And, I mean, there was a lot in there. If you did not hear it, I would suggest getting to radio.com and WGR550.com and on-demand audio and listening to it because the points that he made about what the Panthers have done with Cam Newton, I think were really, really interesting because Newton, they've gone through like three different ideas of how to make him the best that he can be. And the Bills, the way Monson put it to us yesterday, sort of have figured that out already about Allen, and it only took 1 year. Whereas Carolina's tried to have guys who were going to just win jump balls, so they had big guys. And then it was, well, shorter stuff, and we'll try to make them into like more of a West Coast guy. And like, no, what we need is speed. We need guys to get open. Because if guys get open, and this is a point that Sam Monson was making about Allen, if Cole Beasley, for example, is more open than the average replacement level slot receiver, well, then hopefully to a degree that sort of offsets accuracy issues because there's more room for Beasley to work. You don't have to put it in between people. If he's found a real soft spot, then there's a little more room to work around there. And like, yeah, of course you'd still like him to be hit in stride or right on target so that you can maximize run after catch. But if he's open and the ball's a little off, you got a better chance of still getting a completion out of that and maybe even recovering to get some yards after catch despite the ball not being precisely thrown. And I think it's probable that that's where you end up, where the Bills end up with Allen. I think he's, to a degree, what he is. It's not to say he won't get better at aspects of the job. Mental processing and those things. I thought that was another very interesting part of the conversation. And Sal brought up to Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus the comments that were making the rounds from David Cutcliffe talking about accuracy versus Like the thought of inaccuracy being a product of just poor mechanics and guys not being able to make throws, as opposed to it being a function of not reading properly to begin with. Like if you're of a flawed view of what's about to happen, your chances of delivering an accurate ball are going to diminish significantly. If you have an idea of what's about to unfold, so you kind of know where you should be led by the coverage, then everything is sort of arcing that way, and maybe you have a better chance at delivering the ball on time and to the place that you intend to, as opposed to you arrive to the conclusion late and now you're rushed and your platform is screwed up. There's a lot that goes into it. So, I think, as much as I'm focusing today on what Brandon Bean has had to say about running backs, you know, obviously Josh Allen will continue to be a big story. His development and like what fans are going to expect and see from him, and what the Bills are going to ask him to even do for them offensively. I slipped there and said, almost said NHL matchup, because as the segment was beginning, I was thinking to myself, do I have it in me on the 19th of July to do an NHL segment? I don't know. There has been news today. And I don't know, Joe's right there with, hey man, do you think the Sabres will do something today? After we get a trade and a signing today. Jacob Trouba, who was traded already this offseason from Winnipeg to the Rangers, has signed a 7-year, $8 million per season contract, which most people I follow in hockey on Twitter are saying is maybe kind of high, but not ridiculous for him. 50 points, I think. He's probably going to be the Rangers' top defenseman. Is he worth $8 million? I mean, I don't know. I'm not like appalled by the contract or anything. It's not that surprising to me. But there was that. And then earlier than that, even, there was a trade that Joe, how did you say it? There's a hilarious trade.
It was a funny trade.
A funny trade. The Flames and the Oilers traded problematic, aging wingers that make about $6 million for one another. That's the Oilers have unloaded Milan Lucic to Calgary, and Calgary sends James Neal back to Edmonton. I think there's a pick in there that Edmonton is sweetening the pot with because of Lucic's contract. There's also, I read something maybe about some money being retained by Edmonton, but Calgary is one of these teams. They don't come up as often as Winnipeg or even Tampa has, but Calgary's got guys they got to sign. They got a goalie they got to sign, RFA. Matthew Tkachuk is a huge deal for them. They've got big money already tied up in some forwards there, and Giordano as well, their top defenseman. So they've got a cap crunch. Like, they're a team, and one of the people I saw commenting about the trade said, like, this really doesn't do anything to help them significantly. They money in, money out, basically.
It's a hockey trade.
It's a hockey
kinda.
Trade. It's a hockey trade, and it's a kind of garbagey, washed-up, broken-down winger for a kind of garbagey, broken-down, washed-up winger. That's basically what we've got here.
It's about as lame a hockey trade as you can, like a true hockey trade that you can kind of get.
Hey, how much does your guy make? Oh, around $6 million. How much did your guy make? Oh, around $6 million. Is he any good? No, not really. Okay, let's trade.
Right, that'd be like if the Sabres traded Kyle Okposo today for another very overpaid winger from someone else.
Like Lucic.
Right, Lucic. Like if they had traded Okposo for Lucic, that's kind of what Calgary just did.
Right. Would anybody be happy about that? I would not be. I don't even think I'm going to get the goals out of Lucic that I might be able to still get out of Okposo.
I could see fan bases kind of, Calgary or even Edmonton here, I could see them being on board with that idea, just because those guys, when they're in your lineup enough, they kind of, like, every time it seems they're on the ice, it's everyone's bringing up their contract, or like, and they kind of get stale in that way. So it would be a little fresh in that respect, but I just think that would get old pretty quick.
The games would start. Yeah.
And, right. They'd jump on the ice and you realize, oh, that's why you only had to trade this guy for him.
There's already some of this from Calgary. If the Sabres would have made that trade, Okposo for Lucic, I am flooded with people applauding the fact that the Sabres went and got someone who has been, at times, the toughest guy in the league, fighting-wise. I don't think he's really that anymore. I think he's pretty shot. But no question, fans would be excited about it simply because of that. Because we still have, I think there's a significant enough, loud enough portion of the fan base that thinks that that is a big, big problem for the Sabres. And I'm not saying I wouldn't like to be a little bigger and a little tougher or a little meaner, but I think it's far from their biggest problem. But I'll bet a certain bit of the fan base would be super pumped. And I'll bet there's fans in Calgary that are going, all right, I got Milan Lucic. All right, good luck. I mean, I think 10 years ago, maybe that would have been a really great idea. Or even 8 years ago, maybe it would have been a really great idea. I don't know about anymore. 803-0551, 888-550-2550. Joe Marino is coming up at the top of the hour. We'll get Brian Koziol in the 5 o'clock hour as well.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
On the British Open, Mike Schoep has the day off. I'm the Bulldog. This is WGR.
You look at Buffalo's roster, and do they need another left winger? Not really. They're as log jammed on the left wing, in my opinion, as they are at right deep. If Nikolaj Ehlers isn't, I think that's something that the Sabres would probably work around or figure out. Anytime you can add a legitimate top six forward of Nikolaj Ehlers' skill, you know, you want that.
That is Jeff Hamilton, covers the Winnipeg Jets, was a guest on the morning show earlier this week, talking about the Jets as a trade partner with the Sabres. You can find that if you're curious about it at On Demand Audio at WGR550.com. Brendan is next up here on WGR. Hi, Brendan. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you doing?
Really good.
So I just had a question. So regarding the James Neal Lucic trade, do you think Buffalo could pull something like that off with Oposo to someone else who has an aging player with a big contract?
Well, he has a full no-move clause, so you'd have to have him agree to it. But yeah, I mean, we were just talking about it hypothetically. If the Sabres had traded for Milan Lucic, like, would we be excited about that? I mean, I wouldn't be myself, but... You know, you could you? Yeah, I mean, if he agreed to it, sure, you could make a trade like that. I don't know why you'd want to.
Well, just a change of scenery, because
yeah.
That's why Calgary and Edmonton did it, because both of them were pretty much doing nothing. So
yeah.
Oso's been doing not next to nothing for what he's being signed for.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, you could do it. I just don't... I don't expect a change of scenery to make James Neal or Milan Lucic into players that are 5 years younger than they are. I think they are what they are, and I would say the same thing about anything you would be likely to acquire in any kind of a trade that you get Kyle Oposo to agree to. Like, I don't think you're helping yourself.
The other thing, too, about that is, like, if you're trying to pick out another example of, like, who's the other Lucic you would do that for, who's the other James Neal... And I always think about that one free agent class that's just full of those kind of guys, like Andrew Ladd or David Backes. And Oposo.
That's all that same year, yeah.
Right. And like Oposo is way overpaid, but if you're trading for a guy like that, well, of that group, he's actually probably the most productive of them. So I feel like I might be getting the short end of.
Yeah.
Like, of the overpaid, way overpaid wingers in the league, I feel like he might not be the worst of the worst.
Yep. I think what I'm going to do with Oposo, if I'm the Sabres, and like this is you know, it's an exercise in just pretending you know, that it's not as bad as it is. He is not going to be a $6 million hockey player. That's it. And so he has a full no move clause. There are 3 or 4 years left on that contract, right? He's been here 3 seasons now, so there's 4 years left, a 7-year, $42 million contract. He's never going to be a $6 million hockey player again. And so what do I do? I'm sort of stuck with him. For now, for this year, my plan in year 4 of that contract is to play him 15 minutes a night and hope that I get somewhere between 13 and 15 goals from him. And – not worry about the fact that he's making $6 million. Like, play on the bottom six. Get the odd power play, because I think that will add to the goal total. But get max out at 15 goals. If I get 15 goals, okay, is that a $6 million hockey player? Of course not. Does 15 goals help my fourth line? Yes. That's it. Okay. And I don't know that anybody else I'm going to trade for. David Backes is not giving you that. I don't think Lucic is giving. Lucic is shot beyond shot. Okposo still can shoot the puck. Lucic never could shoot the puck. Lucic's value was in just being a train. And I think, you know, that's gotten off the tracks on him. So, you know, interesting thought. I mean, sure, it happened in the league today. Could you do it? Yeah, I mean, it just happened. But I'm not in any hurry to do it myself. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it very much. Take a time out. Joe Marino is next. Draft Network, one of our favorites. He'll join me after this on WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.